Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Are you looking for something simple and delicious to add to your wellness routine, especially this time of year when everyone's trying to stay healthy through the winter months? That is why Jen and I added Manicora Manuka Honey into our teas, coffees, and anywhere that we need a little bit of sweetness. Manicora Honey is rich, creamy, and the most delicious honey you've ever had. It's an absolute game changer, and all you need is one heaped teaspoon each morning to get the most amazing bioactives in Manuka. Now it's easier than ever to try Manicora Honey. Head to manicora.com/docjen to save up to 31%, plus get $25 worth of free gifts with the starter kit, which comes with an MGO 850 plus Manuka honey jar, 5 honey travel sticks, a wooden spoon, and a guidebook. That MGO number is just referring to all those amazing bioactives that are in the honey. That's manicora.com/docjen to save 31% plus $25 worth of free gifts. All right, let's get into the episode. So today we're talking about sesamoiditis. And if you're listening and you're like, what the heck is sesamoiditis? You're probably not alone. First, I should explain quick what a sesamoid bone is. They're kind of like floating bones. Really, your kneecap is actually the largest example of a sesamoid bone in our body. It's a bone that develops as we're growing within a tendon on our body. And it usually is where there's a joint. So what we're going to be just talking about specifically is sesamoiditis of the big toe, where we have these small sesamoid bones. Most people have them. And the interesting thing, when I was looking up sesamoid bones in general, there are people that will have sesamoid bones at almost every finger joint.
Mm.
But there's like different percentages of people who have them at different joints. But most people have them at your thumb and at your big toe, and the sesamoid bones in our big toe is an area that can get a lot of inflammation or, you know, get irritated. We put a lot of pressure through our big toe just from walking, so it's not a surprise that this can be a common issue for people.
Especially those who have a lot of, like, that pain from in the front of the foot, that ball of the foot area, whether you're a dancer, a runner, or just like a weekend warrior who is working out a lot. And so we want to help to go into the research based on what are the protocols that are best, what should you be focusing on, and then of course we're going to give you some exercise recommendations. Interrupting because we have a completely free Strong Start series that is starting next week. Now this is, again, completely free to join. It's not going to be more than 20 minutes of your day, but we're going to drip out some foundational movement patterns that we should all be doing, especially as we age. And rather than being afraid of squats because of your knees or deadlifts because of your back, I'm going to give you variations, cueing, and adaptations for your individual body so you can get started and you can progress confidently and safely. Not only that, you're going to get some sample workouts to join me with and a live Q&A portion where you can ask any question, but this is only for the community that starts in our Strong Start series. So again, this is completely free. It's not just for beginners. It's for people who have just want to understand more about their body, ways that they can do it safely so that they continue doing it without pain and without injury. So if you know someone and you want them to join alongside you so you have better support and accountability, I highly recommend. We're going to have that linked up in our show notes. So just head over there and we'll start together next week.
And of course, like most injuries or diagnoses, this can come in varying degrees. Like you can have an acute flare-up. It can become more of a chronic or perpetual issue, a pain that is recurring. It can even result in a sesamoid fracture, all the way to what's called avascular necrosis, where if we have a fracture in a specific area, it might cut the blood supply to the area, and then those tissues start to essentially die. What we're going to be talking about today is more in the realm of the acute or people who are having chronic recurring pain in the area. Of course, if you get to the level that you have a fracture, that's something that you should be, you know, dealing with someone in person. Even if you just have acute or chronic pain, it's always good to get assessed in person.
100%, yeah.
This is just information that we're giving
based
on the research.
Yeah.
And there are people who have higher risk of developing something like this too.
Right. And especially like we're looking at, and we've talked about a lot of these diagnoses that end in itis, right? We're thinking of that acute inflammation, but usually it's caused from that repetitive pattern over time. So it's from, you know, overloading that tissue to now a degree where it's causing pain. And so we really see this when you're repetitively kind of putting a lot of pressure through the forefront, so the more of the front of the foot rather than the heel. So that's why, you know, a lot of dancers, a lot of runners, you're putting a lot of that pressure kind of forward, or you're getting that repeated dorsiflexion. So this is where the big toe comes up toward the shin. So a lot of pressure into that kind of forced flexion range of motion, that dorsiflexion range of motion. Maybe that's from jumping. Maybe that's from a lot of toe off with sprinting. So a lot of the activities that we kind of look at would be like ballet, running, tennis, baseball catching, because you're in like that low position where you're kind of forced into that dorsiflexion. That's so funny. We're looking at an overuse mechanism, not just like, oh, this flared up and this is, I just need to ice it. But we're looking at, okay, what can we do to really address this overuse? And how do I reload so that I can get back to the activities I love?
Yeah. And other people that may be at risk are high arched people with supinated feet. It's funny because it even says plantar flexed first ray, which isn't something most people will know about, but that's like the first bone in your foot is pointing a little bit downward, or plantar flexed, which is also something that I have. You mentioned baseball catching. I was a catcher in baseball. Limited first MTP dorsiflexion. So you essentially have limited range of motion in your big toe.
Which if you're forcing range of motion that you don't have in the big toe, yeah, that's where you could be overloading.
If you're running on a stiff big toe, you know, you're overloading that joint. So all of these things are people who might have a tendency to overload the big toe with the normal movement they might be doing. So that's just definitely things to keep in mind. So,
I mean, I think most importantly, like you're probably listening to this podcast as well because you had that diagnosis, right? Like you've gone and you've seen someone, you've tried to work on it. Because if you're having this pain, go get diagnosed. Go make sure that this is what you're having. If you rule out any other things that could be going on, again, this is purely educational. So we're not here to tell you what to do when you're having this pain right at the base of the big toe or the ball of the foot. We want you to get assessed properly so that you understand what you need for your body.
All right. What are the treatments and the evidence that goes behind that? The first thing that they point out is conservative care first, adjusting or offloading the foot. So, I mean, rest comes in. And this is especially important if it's like really significant pain. Right. If you're having a really significant acute flare-up that is impacting your ability to even walk normally and do basic normal daily activities. We don't often recommend a significant amount of rest unless it really seems like there's very little active exercise possibilities.
Yeah, and we do want to take that tension off. We do want you to move without pain so that you can get back into the exercises without so much stress in the area. So offloading can look like wearing orthoses, which you should go actually get a properly fitted for a good orthotic, and then you can kind of help potentially reduce some of those pains and symptoms. Another one is getting a thicker shoe that actually assists in like the heel toe walking. So it's kind of like what's called a rocker shoe. It has a thicker sole, it has a thick bottom so that it kind of does the offloading for you and you're not having to bend from that toe so much. So that's going to help to offload. And some people might even need to be in a walking boot where it's completely stiff and you're really not moving through that foot.
And it also kind of has that rocker motion too. And so again, these are all initial strategies to offload and get that toe to calm down so that we can then maybe go into other conservative rehab strategies. They also talk about non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. So you're like over-the-counter Tylenol or stuff, of course. That's going to just be something that targets the inflammation markers in our body.
Not something that we recommend long-term.
Yeah. Not something that we really recommend in general, personally.
Right. Yeah.
But corticosteroid injections. So some studies and the recent conservative systematic review report short-term symptomatic relief with corticosteroid injection, but variable long-term benefit and recurrence of the injury, which again, makes sense. If we're just getting a steroid injection and then don't make any other changes, how are we going to change what initially resulted us in overusing the big toe and making those sesamoids angry.
Yeah. One particular study we looked at did say, you know, corticosteroid injections and orthotics appeared beneficial, but high reoccurrence and limited functional recovery persisted. So that's where we have to look at, like, okay, again, these can be beneficial in that short term, but don't rely on it as your sole treatment.
Same with the next one, which is shockwave therapy or other modalities. So there's emerging evidence that suggests extracorporeal shockwave therapy may be able to help chronic sesamoid injuries. There's limited randomized controlled trials, and they are often combined with other PT or physical therapy modalities. So that's, again, where it's like we're using this extracorporeal shockwave therapy to change what we're feeling in the area, but what is going to be the thing that helps us long term?
Right, exactly.
That we can add to that.
We have to get back into targeted exercises and actually starting to change the way that we're moving through those muscles at the bottom of the foot, especially if you are more prone to having more pressure at that area, which is a higher arch foot, a stiffer foot, or having to do a lot of these activities. You're going to naturally be putting a lot of pressure. So how can we maximize how we're using that whole foot ankle complex better so that we're not just putting so much overloaded tension in that area? And that's what we want to kind of get into. Now, yes, of course, the surgery can be helpful potentially if conservative treatment, like you've really tried. They recommend 6 to 12 weeks. I'm going to recommend a little bit more. Like, you're really trying that consistently to add in the exercises and the stretches, the mobility, the strengthening that you need to create new change. And you're starting to look at the activities that you want to get back into and starting to really slowly and progressively in a thoughtful way with a provider, starting to get back into those activities. So that's where, you know, we have to look at everything prior to just hopping right into surgery.
Yeah. And the takeaway from all of these systematic reviews and consensus was conservative care, which includes the offloading and activity modification, targeted PT and exercise rehab, with or without the addition of injections or the shockwave therapy, should be seen as the first line of defense and is often effective. And they say this about every research, but high quality randomized controlled trials are limited and interventions are heterogeneous, meaning like in the studies that they looked at, they were all using slightly different protocols or methods. But these are the things that should be looked at, like Jen said, before moving on to surgery.
Yeah. So if we are talking about, okay, what does conservative treatment typically look like? Now, this is, again, a pretty typical case. This isn't going to be for everyone. We're just going to highlight what you want to be thinking about, especially when you're working with a provider, and what you can expect for what exercises can be helpful. And if you've worked with a provider, you haven't really found a lot of relief, these are some exercises that we recommend, you know, starting to try out. Now, again, in that initial phase, that's where we want to really manage pain. So get that big shoe, rocker bottom, the thing that we never actually recommend and promote. Get that orthotic, whatever's going to help to reduce that pressure so that we can get into the exercises. That's usually like in the first 0 to 2 weeks, we really want to start to control that pain.
And like we say in everything, this can look different for everyone, where some people might need to go all the way and get the padding and get the orthotics and get the rocker bottom shoe.
Oh yeah,
shoe.
I forgot to mention there's specific padding that you can get
four-foot padding, and maybe significantly modify or stop exercise for a little bit. The other person might just be able to go from running, like say you're a marathoner and you're running an average of 5 to 10 miles a day. You could just go from running 10 miles to running 3 miles every day for a week. And that could be your activity modification, because that's a significant drop for you. You're significantly reducing what you're, you know, the pressure you're putting through that toe. So it's going to look slightly different for everybody. Not everyone's going to need to run and get the rocker shoe and the pad and stop all activity. Or if you're just like a casual runner, maybe you take up swimming or rowing or biking for a week instead and don't make any shoe modifications. So all of these will be adapted to the individual.
Right. And then when we get back into some of the early rehab that they kind of recommend, that we, you know, some of the studies go over a lot of manual treatment and joint mobilization. So this is directly working with a clinician, with a therapist. Typically, what we're going to look at is trying to improve that range of motion or just take off some of the tension that you're having in that first toe. So maybe we're doing a little distraction of that toe, kind of easing some of that pressure. Maybe we're doing a little bit of mobilization of that big toe, trying to get a little bit more range of motion gently in the beginning and starting to progressively go into that. We could do some manual work at the bottom of the foot, just trying to relax the tissue tension because we have, you know, our big toe muscle that really is controlling and helping the force and the pressure of that big toe that connects right into that area. So if we can take some of that tension off of that bottom of that area, we can help to reduce again some of that pain and pressure. One more area that I would recommend as well is going up the chain even more. So can we reduce some of the tension and tissue pressure of our calf? Can we improve our ankle range of motion so that we're not putting so much pressure right into that big toe? So that's where I want to look up the chain a little bit higher than, you know, what some studies locally recommend.
And that, I mean, that can keep going. You can go all the way into the hamstring, into the pelvic floor, into the glutes.
Right.
It's that whole posterior chain. And how are we dispersing force through that whole chain effectively? And like you said, you might be working with a physical therapist initially for these big toe mobilizations, but there's ways that PTs will teach patients. I mean, it's pretty easy to do a big toe mobilization on your own and work on that at home. And then we get into strengthening. And of course, a lot of these protocols are using very common exercises like towel curls and toe scrunches. And while those can be good to just like, they can be good to keep consistent. And that's why those things are used in research a lot, where we might use a slightly different approach.
Right. We want to start to activate the bottom of the foot. And a lot of people don't have this connection anymore, whether it's because we're always in shoes, we're in house shoes, we're in padded shoes outside. Like we're usually losing that connection to the bottom of the foot to really increase strength. So where those, again, are beneficial. Other things we want to look at as well, can we even spread our toes? When you spread your toe, you actually activate the bottom of the foot. We increase the tension in that muscle tissue in the intrinsic foot muscles. So can we spread the toe? Can we move the toes in different ways? Can we just activate the what's called our short arc? So without scrunching the toes, can we have control to move the ball of the foot toward the heel and kind of lift and hold? Can we start to do some isometric holds, creating that arch while keeping the ball of the foot on the floor and not bending in the toes? So there's different control of that intrinsic foot muscle that we want to start to create without having to just rely on those. And then that's where we move into, okay, now we want to start to address that muscle that's connecting into that, and that really works to pull that big toe down to the floor, right? And so that's where working on like resisted flexion with usually a band, a TheraBand, to kind of control that range of motion, pushing pressure down and then slowly coming up, pushing pressure down, slowly coming up. That's a really good way to start to work into that muscle specifically.
It's like bicep curls for your big toe.
Yeah.
And then there's like different neuromuscular control and gait repatterning. Mm-hmm. So when you're working with a physical therapist, they might watch you walk and see if there's anything that they can pick out as to why you might be putting a lot more pressure through that big toe. Mm-hmm. So getting some instruction there. But then after that, so really this, what we went over is the first 0 to 6 weeks, that activity modification phase, and then getting into early rehab where we're just starting to activate those foot muscles again. And then is when we start to progressively load. Again, this is going to vary for any sort of different individual. Some people at 3 to 4 weeks might already be getting into progressing. But a great way would be to, one, start reintroducing the activity that you were doing at a lower load and seeing how that feels. But as far as like strengthening through that, the toes and the posterior chain, I think looking at heel raises is a great way to find a lot of different progressions. You can start on the ground and just do your basic heel raise, go up and slowly down.
With two feet.
We always like to talk about taking a ball and squeezing it in between your heels to make sure that you're staying over the ball of your foot. Mm-hmm. Another thing that you could do is roll up a small towel and put it under your toes.
It's a lot more load.
That's going to put a bit more stretch through that posterior chain from your big toe through the bottom of your foot and see how that feels. And there's continual ways to progress this by going on a step or a stack of books so that you're doing it at a deficit. So your heels are hanging down and then you're going all the way up. And then you can progress to doing 2 feet up, 1 foot down, and then doing 1 foot all the way up and down. And so that's, you know, a big progression and a lot of different like difficulty level there for kind of all different stages.
Exactly. But that's where, again, like working in person with someone becomes so beneficial because they get to see not only what's happening with your foot, but what could be happening at your hips. Are we lacking some hip control, some hip mobility into extension? And that's why we're putting so much tension into that toe. Are we lacking, you know, just stability and awareness through that whole core hip complex? There's so much more that we want to look at rather than just the foot. And this has to be taken in consideration, especially when you're thinking about getting back to some of those higher level activities. Like if you want to get back to your running and your other things, there's more than just the foot and the toe that has to go into play here. So, and I think that's really important to consider. And really being diligent with it prior to considering surgery or anything else. But as long as you're consistent, as long as you're really working at it and you're working with someone, and don't be afraid to go to someone else if that person isn't working or, you know, it isn't progressing you the way that you feel like you should be, it's okay to seek out another PT and see what else is possible.
And whether you're dealing with something like this or just feel like you have needs or restrictions in your feet, toes, ankles, on Gen Health, we have a foot and ankle plan. It's just a 2-week plan that has multiple phases that is going to take you through a lot of exercises. And as you're going through these exercises, you might notice, oh, wow, I have some significant restrictions in this exercise with my toes or my ankles or my foot. And it'll point out those things that might be one of the weaker links or restricted links on the chain that you get to work on. If you check out the link down in the show notes, you go to gen.health/free trial. That will get you a free week trial that you can dive into this plan, see if it's right for you. Make sure you use code OPTIMAL at checkout. That's going to get you your first month for just $20, which could get you through the first two phases of the foot and ankle plan.
Yeah, the first two phases. And it'll progress you the way that Dom kind of talked about with the heel raises. Like, we'll take you through those progressions so you don't have to think about it on your own.
Thanks for joining us for that overview on sesamoiditis. If you know someone who's dealing with foot pain or toe pain, please pass this along as it might be useful for them. If you haven't, please consider leaving a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform. And we'll see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.